Today, whoa, Tino, as we talk about the cartwheeling Colombian, one of the greatest of all the meddling kids, Faustino Asprilia, the Faustino the Furious. Plus, Roma Porto, the latest from Il Campionato, which classic Milan pair do Paqueta and Piantek remind you of, and Palermo. Here with Golazzo today, it's Benvenuto Gabriele Marcotti.
Great to be here.
Oh, that's nice to know. And also to you,
salve.
Mr. James Horncastle.
Do you think that James might have some plumbing issues in a week's time?
I think he might. Look out, James. Your standpipe is not sounding right to me.
If you get it sorted ahead of time, this is your chance to influence the flow of history.
Absolutely.
Literally the flow. Nice pun there, Gab. Thank
nice.
You. Wonder where I got that from.
Anyway, now, listen, we've got lots to discuss. And there's every chance that Gab might get a little bit animated about it later on when we talk about what's happening in the Champions League and what's happening in Serie A. But we're going to begin, though, with our retro section. And today, pleasingly, one of the quietest, least colourful men ever to grace Serie A.
Managing to evade the challenge from Signori. He's got Benarivo outside him. Asprilla through the middle here. Asprilla with the shots! Magnificent goal!
Well, that's a candidate for goal of the season.
Super skill by Zola. Asprilla. Deceiving Rossi. Good effort too, well saved by Zenga. In goes Zola. Flat was with him. It's Asprilla. It's two. Fabulous goal. Zola and Asprilla tormenting Sampdoria there.
Yes, indeed. Faustino Asprilia. And great shout this week, James. What's your favourite Tino Asprilia story?
Well, going back to Colombia after starring in the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final against Atletico Madrid, where he scored twice in a come-from-behind win. Goes off to see his mum. He's driving around. A bus pulls in front of him. He gets angry. He gets out of his car. He starts kicking the emergency door to try and get it open, so he can have an altercation with the driver.
The driver? No, not just the driver. All 50 crazed Colombian inmates on the bus. He was going to fight them all.
kicks his foot through the door. Obviously, a bit of glass gets in his foot, and he misses the next month. Misses the Cup Winners' Cup
misses
final.
Misses the game against Royal Antwerp. Palmer's first great cup success. My word. What about you, Gab? What do you think of when you think of Tino Asprilia?
It was just the fact that, like, he seemed to play on fast forward. I remember glimpses of him just kind of seizing the ball, and it looked like one of those like black and white films from the 1930s when the action suddenly speeds up. And
because he had that loping run, deceptively so.
Yeah, but then he'd accelerate.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Which didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, there's so much packed into it. It's easy to go and stereotype and make jokes about, you know, indiscipline, South Americans, blah,
condoms.
Blah, blah, and condoms and
riding
guns.
Around on a horse in a dinosaur suit.
Yeah, but that's one of the we'll play a little bit of Asprilia true or false, I think, later on. But yeah, it's easy to stereotype. But this guy, those first, what was it, 3-4 years at Parma before he made the move to Newcastle, he was electric. And
I was just saying, a guy I know, this is when he returned to Parma, went to see him at his house. It's an agent. And Asprilla's like, I'll be right back. And he leaves the room. So he's sitting here and looks at what's on his coffee table, which you'd assume coffee table book, something like that. He has these two catalogs from, one of them's the writing is all in Cyrillic on the front. And he's like, what's this doing here? And then he opens it and he notices that it's like some sort of industrial catalog, and it's all like automatic weapons, machine guns, survival gear, and stuff like that. And then Maspia came back. He's like, well, what's the deal with this? Like, do you actually buy this stuff or own it? And he's like, yeah, I know. You know, sometimes I just like looking at it. Sometimes I order it.
Wow. I don't want to stereotype, but it is fair that he came through one of the most colourful cities in the world in late 80s, early
90s. One of the most colourful times in the world, too.
Absolutely. Medellin, which is where he was playing for Atletico Nacional, where his success led to the move to Parma. There was talk at the time that Medellin's most famous resident was in some way involved in that move because it helped the flow of money internationally was advantageous for more reasons than just footballing ones. I don't know if that was that a story that you heard at the time?
You know what? People always talk about, and this is what Buckingham talking about, we talk about because football's a cash business and stuff, and they talk about, well, money laundering is rife. I'd love to explain how they laundered money. I mean, I know it's pretty obvious if I'm hypothetically, and I'm talking about Escobar, who's dead and so therefore can't be libeled. If hypothetically I were, a drug kingpin, yeah, I have all this cash coming in because unfortunately I have to sell my thing for cash. I need to spend it on something that might yield a return. Mm. Then, yeah, hypothetically, putting money into a football club where I might pay a lot of people in cash, and then when I sell my players or get TV revenue or prize money or whatever, it comes back to me clean. Mm. That might make sense.
It'd be really good if, like, you've had three seasons of Narcos, and instead of doing what the third one, or is it the fourth, in Mexico, they just relocated to Narcos Palma.
All right, well, let's relocate ourselves to Palma, 1992. An interesting time for a young Colombian to be arriving. What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. That's right. That's Hadaway rocked your world and mine, listener. In the foggy, discreetly wealthy streets of one of Italy's finest places to live, Parma, strides a wide-eyed Colombian by the name of Tino Spirelli, who's just about to score a really significant goal. He arrives in 1992, and in that Panama team, you had Nevio Scala, who was kind of a really nice guy, these huge farmer's hands and a massive jaw. He basically looked like Matt Damon, who'd had a massive amount of steroids and crossed with Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. Do you not think? And had Cesare Di Maldini's haircut.
I mean, that's quite a Frankenstein's monster.
Well, yeah, with real hair, though.
But with real hair.
I once... The thing about Nevio Scala is he's one of those people who that you could just call all the time. And I remember on more than one occasion, I rang him during the offseason, and it was like this pop behind him. And he was literally on his farm, and what I was hearing was a tractor. And this one time, he was actually riding the tractor when he answered the phone.
Magnificent. So he was the manager of that Parma team, James.
There's some good stories about him and Espria, because Espria was very frustrating in that he could win games on his own, as we'll later discuss, or he just would not follow instructions, would do his own thing. And Scala would obviously try and get him his fitness up, would send him on these long runs to the point where he'd have Espria sort of taking off his boots and then throwing them as far as he can, saying, "You're non sono Forrest Gump." And then I think at the end of one
season... I am not Forrest Gump.
And then at the end of the season, Parma used to give all their fines away to charity. And there was a list on the dressing room wall of, you know, various sort of misdemeanors incurred and how much every player owned. And when Espria found out that basically that was what happened, he went and found the paper with all the fines on, scrunched it up and ate it and swallowed it.
Ate them, damn. Right. Okay, well, anyway, so that first season, he's joined a team that already has Thomas Berlin, Sandro Melli, Sindico, Marco Ozio,
and Taffarel.
Playing at the back.
George Grün.
But I'm thinking, now Taffarel, okay, so Taffarel, that's his last
Berlin
season.
Berlin and Espria going running together.
Because then you have Belotta. Belotta then kind of took over in goal behind, I think, no?
I think they alternated for a bit. Taffarel was very young when he arrived.
Mm. Right. So you also had Apolloni, you had Minotti, Di Chiara, some at Benarivo as a wing back.
Benarivo.
Yeah. It was such a great team.
Tempi giusti.
Mm. And this Parma team, who in those days kind of were seen as the force of, I mean, we now know what we know about the money that was behind them. But at the time, they were the little team that could, from this tiny town, 180,000 inhabitants, but with well-spent money, were suddenly challenging the biggest clubs in Italy and indeed in Europe. And the 23rd of March, 1993, that first season, they go to Milan, to San Siro, and it's a stuffy spring day. They're taking on the greatest team in the world, without question, Milan, a team that hadn't lost since 1991, 58 matches. Mm. They did not lose, Milan, 58 matches. But that day, they went down to Espria.
it was a free kick,
yeah,
as I recall,
mm,
at the San Siro. And I remember, this is so typical Capello. He said, like, well, we saw it coming. It was a miracle that, you know, we even got there because, you know, from a profilo tecnico tattico, which means technical tactical perspective, which is one of those meaningless buzzwords that he uses. And then I looked back to look at the papers and I thought, like, this is once again one of those like recollections that, you know, you have, nobody else did, which is, you know, his version was that on the day they were also down, it was inevitable. And kind of like after the first few minutes, he understood that one way or another, Parma were going to score. And then Asprilla scored the type of goal that he would never, ever score again. And that was that. And it was meant to be, and it was a fresh start. That's not what happened at all. They were actually still on a high. They'd been through the difficult period. Obviously, they knew they were going to lose at some point. They certainly didn't expect to lose at home in that game. They certainly had chances. And Asprilla would score other goals like that.
Yeah, and I think what people in this country and maybe beyond tend to forget about Panama is these guys were fresh out of Serie B. This club had never played top flight football before, and it wasn't like they just came up and basically, like, let's look to survive here. They were immediately punching well above their weight. I mean, you look at Asprilla's time there, they finished third, fifth, third. And they won more or less everything aside from the Scudetto and the Champions League in that time. They cleaned up. So, again, for a team like that to go to San Siro, to beat that team, and to do it with what is a fantastic free kick. It's not just a kind of, it goes through the wall, it gets the deflection. It is one of those which has a wonderful trajectory to it, where it looks like it's almost going over and then it dips just at the right moment and really faintly goes under the bar. It's a magnificent free kick.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. A lot of people listening will go, Asprilla was a legend for Newcastle as well, that the hat-trick against Barcelona famously. They'll talk about his incredible first goals for Colombia against Argentina, no?
The 5-0.
The 5-0 at the Monumental, and he gets a brace in that. But focusing really, as you say, there weren't that many goals. 106 games, only 28 goals for Parma. Five trophies that he won with them. The Cup Winners' Cup, which he had to sit out the final of there at Wembley. The Coppa UEFA twice, once in the season after he'd returned from Newcastle, a European Super Cup and a Coppa Italia as well, bless. But just so many stories as well. How weird was it, Gab, to have a player as estruso, if you like, as larger than life as Asprilla in a town like Parma?
It was odd because, you know, obviously we had characters and stuff like that before, but, you know, Parma's an hour and a bit away from Milan. So
fair.
On your nights off, it's not hard to go and find some
if
nightlife.
If the fog permits.
Yes, if you can get out of the fog. You know, it is just a completely different concept, a completely different way of life, especially back then, you know, I mean.
It was like a family club as well, this really sober town. When I think of Parma, I always think of the flat caps and the Loden and just called it grey. I mean, really immaculate streets, but a really sober discreet town.
You think of the players on that team, you've listed a lot of them. I mean, the manager Scala, Gab says, a bit farmer stock, essentially, quite humble. A lot of the others, Apolloni, Minotti. Minotti's quite a refined, gentleman-like figure.
Very polite, yeah.
They would occasionally, you know, go out for dinner, maybe have a glass of wine at dinner, and then say, right, essentially, they all lived more or less next to each other, drive back, and they would, you know, some of them would wait to see if Tino would basically, you know, park his car in the garage, and then 5 minutes later, think the coast is clear and then drive back out and, you know, go for one of his big nights on the town, wherever it may be. But
it's very much, I mean, the ethos there was very much their sort of the whole notion of kind of like the bourgeois gentleman farmer countryside sort of, you know, I don't know.
It's sort of the Harrogate of
Italy. I was just going to say Harrogate. It is the, you know, that sort of idealized ethos. And then all of a sudden you drop this guy in there. And again, let's not forget, Asprilla famously owned a ranch in rural Colombia. So he wasn't necessarily averse to nature and the countryside, as we would later find out.
We can do true or false about Asprilla's stories. You mentioned his ranch, where footage of him riding his horse playing football with a kind of 6 foot diameter football, his horse doing the kicking and him riding on the horse dressed as a dinosaur. I'm going to say I don't think that was him.
Really?
Yeah, there's another dinosaur clip, which he, I think, sent to Alan Shearer of him doing a flip into a rubber dinghy dressed as a dinosaur. I think there is a back catalogue of footage, of almost stock footage of people dressed as dinosaurs doing weird things. And I've seen that a guy dressed as a dinosaur riding a horse in an advert for a guy who trains horses in somewhere in America.
Okay.
So I think that
That's
might not be him.
Having seen his goal celebrations,
right,
the cartwheels, somersaults, you know, you can totally see him being able to pull that off.
Right. The condoms, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Tinos.
Yeah.
Strawberry flavour, chocolate flavour.
And his favourite, guava flavour. Because, and this is touching, they had a guava tree in his backyard when he was a kid, and he always loved the flavour, so...
I imagine they focus grouped it.
Do you know what? I don't know. Anyway, he did pose nude, full frontal, on the cover of a Columbia magazine.
Yeah.
And impressively so.
He was also...
Yeah.
On the back of that, he was also...
On the back of the magazine?
No, but... Okay. So he was also one of the first Colombian footballers to speak out in favor of LGBT, you know, in a part of the world that's often a little bit not the most progressive and open to LGBT issues. To have a celebrity like him come out and say, like, you know, I don't care who enjoys a picture of my body naked or what they do with it, you know, I'm open to all, and it's time that we be more inclusive.
Excellent.
There is this story about when Tino comes over to Italy, should have told this earlier, where I think he believes he is entitled in his contract to 8% of the transfer fee, which is about $4 million at the time. And the president of his club in Colombia doesn't pay up. And then a few years later, that president is running for mayor somewhere in Colombia and basically begs for Tino Asprilla's support. Yeah, come on, get behind me. Can you say something and we can use it in my political manifesto? You know, Tino Asprilla endorses so-and-so. And Asprilla got back to him to say, you have my support. My financial support is the 8% that you owed me.
There you go.
So there you go.
Petra Skarback. Was it Sharback? I'm not sure. In the movies, they always said Skarback, the way I remember.
I haven't watched as much porn as you have, so...
Anyway, this was the other reason that he became really famous, because the Italian papers lapped this up.
I wonder why.
Yeah. I mean, but this was, I think, his second season there, where amid the gloomy winter nights of Parma, he was observed going out with this German adult movie actress, who then certainly made a little bit of capital out of it. She was all over the papers saying, oh, yeah, we only went out a couple of times. Now he's always calling me on the phone. I want to explain to Scala and the Tanzi family, who are in the club, it's not my fault if he's not scoring anymore. But it was shortly after that that his wife, Catalina, who was really sweet, I met the pair of them when he'd first arrived, and I guess maybe after that Milan goal.
But apparently Petra Skarback had a relationship with Tony Curtis as well.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then, you know, I think after, you know, her little fling with Tino fell apart, she began a career as a body painter.
What, painting her body or using her body to paint?
Well, I imagine if she wanted to make a career out of it, she couldn't just paint her own body.
I don't know. It's interesting, though, because this was going to be a golazzo about Asprilla. And we've not had that many on-field stories to tell. His quote was, if I played at Milan or Juve, then I probably would have won the Golden Ball. Because after all, if Nedved won it, with all due respect, that was Tino's view.
He did
that
say great,
that Nedved thing was wonderful.
He did say that had he played for a big market club like Milan, Inter, Juve, he would have won the league rather than, you know, some, as we've said, the Italian Harrogate.
but it was funny when you talk about, I mean, I think you touched upon it before when you mentioned when Colombia beat Argentina 5-0 at the Monumental. When people think back to that Colombia side, if they ever do, they only think back to it for one reason.
But this is the build-up to the 94 World Cup and then Escobar, of course.
Yeah, it's a different Escobar from the one before, although you can watch the 30 for 30 called The Two Escobars, tell you the whole story. But Andres Escobar, defender, you know, scores an own goal against the U.S., Colombia lose, and they go out of the World Cup, and it's a national tragedy. People don't realize how dominating that team was and how, I think, I think I'm right in saying, like, the manager, Paco Maturana, who at the time, especially, there weren't very many managers of color. You know, he had won the Intercontinental Cup before. He was kind of like the South American Sacchi in some ways. And he had built this absolute machine of a team with Valderrama and Freddy Rincon and all these guys, Leonel Alvarez, who looked ridiculous but was a really good player.
You mentioned he looks ridiculous and not Valderrama.
Yeah, well, or indeed Rene Guita, who was also on that team. But they were so good, and like they had such an importance of sort of like the underdogs, and here we come, and we're going to subvert the established order. And there's a certain parallel to that, I think, and then they fall apart. There was a certain parallel to that, obviously, with him at Parma, where they didn't end up winning the title. And of course at Newcastle too, where, if I'm not mistaken, the season there, that was the whole, you know, Keegan, I'd love it, right? Season.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. He very much slots into that narrative as a functioning team that is disrupted by a high profile arrival. Although there are those who say that the real story there.
Or I meant more like a team that's about to subvert the established order.
And then I see, right.
The deep state and the powers that be go and they say, hey, deplorables, get back in your basket.
Right.
That's what happened to Parma, that's what happened to Colombia, and that's what happened to Newcastle.
That's why they nobbled Keegan,
I would have added something to that conversation, but I've made the mistake of clicking on Peter Schabach's official website.
Oh, with the body painting?
I think Charlie has done the same, our producer, yeah.
Well, Faustino Sprilia, a flame that burnt briefly, but burnt so very brightly in Serie A, James.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fantastic goal against Inter, which I would recommend anyone look out, where there's a sort of switch of play, he's outside of the box. Within a split second of him bringing it down, he just hits this right foot shot, top corner, cross goal, boom, Tino Asprilla.
The other thing too with Asprilla is people don't realize is after he left Europe, I think he played for like 50 different clubs in Brazil and Colombia and kept moving on. And I think at that point, he still had a lot of money and he just got crazier and crazier off the pitch, you know, hence, you know, the guns, the anger issues.
The riding horse as a dinosaur playing football.
The condoms.
Yeah,
why not? It was on, you know.
There's a kind of eye-opening Blizzard piece where a journalist who I think is based in Colombia goes to stay with Tino for a weekend at his ranch.
Wow.
And a lot of the kind of Colombian clichés are confirmed by this story, the kind of popping out to the shops for a couple of minutes and turning out 8 hours later and the succession of colourful guests at the villa. But what also comes across is that Tino's a really down-to-earth guy who's basically, in his mind, living his best life and really wants everybody else to be doing the same thing. And, you know, what greater praise can he give anyone? Anyway, Tino Asprilla, who certainly lit up the grey town of Parma.
Why would you stop with this grey town of Parma?
There.
It's not grey.
It's so
grey. Yeah, obviously, if it's the dead of winter and it's not foggy in the summer.
In the summer when it's too hot for anyone to be there.
It does get a little bit humid, but you know what?
It's a lovely town.
I'm 2019.
I love Parma. Not just the grey city of Parma, but the greyish early 90s days of Serie A when the goals were few and the football was 4-4-2. He was a breath of fresh air.
Scala always played three at the back.
I know he did. Or five, I think, probably. It's Wednesday, the morning after Roma's 2-1 victory in the Champions League last 16 over Porto in a game which took a long time to get going.
This is also Porto's side that were without the two best, Marega and, of course, Abubakar.
And Corona as well.
So they didn't really have a striker, and then Brahimi got hurt.
The fact that Porto pulled one back made it 2-1.
I mean, it was an unlucky goal to concede. I think it was a nervy ending because Roma tired. I think you look at the guys that Di Francesco had on the bench. They were without Under, without Schick. Basically, guys who could get you up the other end of the pitch and maybe take some of the pressure off them.
Once everybody gets tired.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not like you're going to... I mean, the way Zaniolo and El Shaarawy played, you're not going to say, like, well, you should have started Patrick Schick instead of these guys.
No.
Or Under. But, yeah, once they got tired, maybe that's when you make the change.
I thought second half for 25 minutes, half an hour, Roma played really well. I thought their midfield was excellent. Pellegrini and Cristante. Dzeko hit the post twice.
He had a really good game.
often creating things really out of nothing.
That late break, which he kind of side-foots a ball out of nothing to, I'm not sure, was it El Shaarawy?
Yeah, and then Militao, who I think looks worth the hype, just completely monstered El Shaarawy.
But the big story for the papers this morning was the man who scored both Roma's goals, the youngest Italian ever to do that in the Champions League, Zaniolo.
Yeah, and I think what keeps surprising me about this kid is Di Francesco plays him all over the place and it doesn't seem to have any impact on his performances. You know, when he kind of first came onto the scene, made his debut, remember, at the Bernabeu in that 3-0 defeat, it felt like Di Francesco was just making a point that, you know, this kid's got the hunger, the desire that the guys have left in the stands have not. And since then, I mean, he's justified not only Di Francesco's decision to put him in the team, but also Mancini's decision to call him up before that for the senior Italy squad. And as I said, he's played as a number 8, he's played as a number 10. Last night he was playing out wide on the right for I think maybe the second or third time this season. And there are other talented kids at Roma who've tried to play that position. You think of Justin Kluivert, you think of Nainggolan last year, you think of Schick when they've tried to get Schick in the team. And he scores twice, one with his left, one with his right. Probably could have had another goal in between that where he popped up at the far post on the left-hand side. A lot of people getting carried away, saying he's predestinato, you know, he's destined for great things. I think what strikes me about him is he just looks unflappable.
Right.
He seems to have the composure and is unfazed by playing at that level.
Mm. Of course, not to belabor the point, but obviously on an injured team, which seems to stink it up every week and is totally devoid of any creativity except for the bras.
He loved the bras.
Or Perisic when he wants to, which is never. Can you imagine if that guy, they'd actually said, hey, look, he can play.
So they let him go for what, $4.5 million?
Who knows, because it's one of those stupid make weights in the Nainggolan deal. But
right.
I think the price in the end was six. Is that the calculation they made, 6.5, something like that?
Yeah, I think six.
They're just so idiotic, yeah. So stupid. So,
okay. Well, Roma and Italy's gain. Inter's lost. Calcio AS Roma writing in to say Roma have won a Champions League game with 7 Italians in the starting lineup and a 19-year-old Italian scoring a brace. This is what Italian football needs. Roma deserve credit. They also have Miranti in goal. We were talking about the players who were missing and Olsen not fit on the bench. I mean, it was a fitness issue. No,
he had a groin problem.
Back at the Dragao, you're less than confident, though, about Roma's ability to get the result they need?
You know, if that was a good performance, if Roma had won that game 3-0,
yeah,
well, I don't think, you know, it would have been entirely plausible.
Well, we'll see on the 6th of March that you're confident. That's good. All right. Anyway, speaking of people getting perhaps overexcited about young talent, let's move on to some of the results from the weekend. And in particular, one of those four teams separated by 1 point chasing fourth spot in Serie A, AC Milan, who beat Cagliari 3-0 and... basically, Piontek continued his scoring streak. Paquetá got his first goal for the Rossoneri. And the two of them, a lot of people, I must admit, I was among them going, it's Kaká and Shevchenko all over again.
There's that picture. There's that picture that was tweeted out between like an internet meme, right?
But, I mean, Paquetá had this, this was kind of the way he was billed when he arrived. He's like Kaká. But it's Piontek who's just deadly. That guy's extraordinary.
Deadly is the right word because, you know, he does not need... many chances. You know, if he gets just one chance, he'll take it. And I think that was the stunning thing about his goal, really. He hadn't really done much up until that, if anything at all.
Not been good, until that point.
Yeah, and manages to place the ball through a crowd of people into the back of the net.
Milan, the club of Van Basten, of Inzaghi, of Shevchenko, they've been waiting a long time for a player to truly take on that mantle. Have they found him?
I've been skeptical about this. I made a bet with somebody that he wouldn't score 20 goals this season in Serie A.
How many is he on now?
He's on 15, so it doesn't look good for me. It looks like I will owe somebody a very expensive steak dinner.
What will you take them?
We're going to...
if you go.
Well, we'll definitely go. It's just a question of who plays. We're going to one of my favorite Italian steakhouses in London.
Where's
Macellaio
that?
Roberto Costa. There's actually six of them.
We've been there, James.
Is that the place that we
Southern?
Went to? Yeah.
Of course, will be going to the original one in Kensington.
Okay.
But it's pretty special.
You're not willing to commit yet on Piontek and Paquetá.
Hey, I mean, Paquetá, he has lots and lots of moments in games, which make him kind of excellent YouTube or Twitter material.
But don't you think he's added a verve?
The verve that you're talking about is missing is really what Milan needed.
Uh-huh.
Because with the injuries that they had, when you ask, okay, well, what's going to be exciting, right?
Yeah.
It's Suso beating two men and then losing the ball or shooting from 50 yards out. Çalhanoğlu's really been horrendous, really until the last couple of games he's been okay. Buenaventura's been out. So who is there who is exciting? And they haven't had that. The players who are supposed to be exciting haven't been exciting or they've been hurt. And so suddenly, you know, you've got this guy and you've got Piontek who, you know,
finishes chances.
Yeah. Also, James, I mean, Leonardo and Maldini, they had their first transfer market in the summer. If you look at a lot of those players, they haven't really worked out for them. Higuain's gone to Chelsea. Castillejo is Castillejo. Timo Bakayoko's done well, but Laxalt as well.
Oh, yeah.
They spent, what, 12, 14 million. The January transfer window seems to have gone very well for them. It's kind of really kick-started their campaign. They're going to get players back now. Caldara, Bilia, make them play better football, I think. So I think in that sense, it's positive.
Looking good for them in that race for fourth spot, where they have that 1 point lead over Roma, Lazio and Atalanta, who, of course, they're going to be facing this Saturday. That's the key game of this weekend. How exciting does that match look in prospect in Bergamo?
Super exciting because Atalanta have thrashed into there 4-1. They obviously drew with Juve, but they were leading in that game, knocked them out of the cup. They came back from, 3-0 down to draw 3-3 with Roma. Spectacular games. I think Atalanta really shown up, humiliated the Milan sides over the last 3 years, particularly when you look at how much Milan have spent. Some of that money has gone on Atalanta players, Kessié, Conti. Milan have spent $363 million in the last 4 years on players.
Wow.
Atalanta have turned a profit of $82 million in that time.
The $363 million, is that a net loss from Milan?
That's a loss. That's the amount they've invested.
It's a negative transfer spend.
So that's
exactly.
Not...
A negative transfer spend, whereas Atalanta have made $82 million in that time.
And you could actually add the $9 million on Higuain on top of that.
Yeah.
Amazing. I know you were mentioning Atalanta's salary. What, 14th highest wage bill in Serie A?
Yeah. And I want to mention something else because with Atalanta, there's always a narrative, right?
Uh-huh.
Atalanta is, you know, they spend a ton of money on their youth academy. They've probably produced a ton of players. But we said that's not how they put this team together this year. They put this team together, you know, almost Udinese style, right?
Yeah. Well, Udinese style or dare I say Chievo style?
No,
back in the day.
No, but why?
But it's working, and one player in particular, Duvan Zapata, 9 goals since the turn of the year. Only one player in Europe has scored more than that, and that's Sergio Aguero. So who'd you like for Saturday?
Atalanta.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think Atalanta will probably finish fourth.
Oof.
Oh, stop.
And win the cup.
As for Inter, Gab, you'll have been excited to see them winning a game this
last weekend. Yeah, it was tremendously exciting. And then also going after and like crucifying Icardi afterwards because supposedly he's now the problem. Lautaro comes on, scores with his first touch after Inter have stunk
good
up
goal,
the
though, wasn't it?
He's fine, but it's an hour. You're playing against Parma, a bunch of mopes who've already won their season because with their draw and their comeback against Juve. You needed a reaction.
Right.
You got a win. You know, I'm sorry, but you won 1-0 against Parma, needing a substitute to come on.
Yeah.
And then your constructive way of reacting is to go and destroy Icardi. Okay, fine.
How do you feel? How much did Spalletti enjoy the win? At the end, he seemed to be shouting into the middle distance. So he and Nainggolan leave the sideline at the same time. And Spalletti, who's just basically observed the whole match in that kind of passive-aggressive sulk of his, comes onto the pitch and just starts speaking into thin air and kind of like waving his hands in the air and complaining about something. I'm not sure what the story was there. Possibly Icardi.
I told you, it's Mr. Kurtz.
Okay, yeah.
You don't question him. You worship him.
Weird tension. Tension's maybe a bit too strong to call it that, but disconnect between him and Marotta, Inter's new chief executive.
Do you feel that's only going to end one way?
I don't know. I mean, I think Marotta's come out and defended Spalletti. But the thing is, Spalletti's response to that is, I don't need defending. Why is he coming out and saying I need support?
He's a prickly character. Oh, just some breaking news here, courtesy of producer Charlie. Inter have just announced that the club captaincy will no longer be the responsibility of the misfiring Mauro Icardi, but instead another man who creates about as many goals per game, their goalkeeper, Samir Handanovic. What does that mean? Is that just a kind of cosmetic thing, or is there significance given the ongoing contract wrangles?
Listen, the only circumstance in which this is a good move is if Icardi went to the club and said, look, I feel too much pressure.
Right. Is that possible?
I suppose. It seems like a pretty remote possibility from what we know of Icardi, though he's a bit of an odd character, so who knows? But right. Otherwise...
What's the other take?
It's disciplining, I think, perhaps. You know, this is not conduct becoming of a captain of Inter. But then again, they could have taken the captain's armband away from him when he, you know, decided to release an autobiography, age 23, in which he criticised the Kuluva.
Or when he invited...
The captain, then.
He was the
was
captain,
he?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah, and that's why they said they would never recognise him as captain. There was a lot of pressure for the club to take the armband off him.
Mm. And when he invited out the Kuluva Nord, that was a... I mean, not in the sense of taking them to a steak dinner like Gab, but basically said, I and my friends from the Barrios will have you.
And then the ultras turned up outside his house and saying, where are they? Yeah.
So he's like, oh, look, Mauro, I see you here. You're hanging out with all your friends. And he's there by himself because he doesn't have any except for Wanda.
I mean, this is just...
It's probably more a case of just but the stupid thing is, you know, again, just because he and Marotta don't see eye to eye...
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if it's him. I wonder if it's just Spalletti's brilliant idea to motivate him. I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll all find out soon enough.
We shall see.
I'm looking forward to seeing Icardi at Juve next year now.
Well, it's not the first time that idea has been mentioned.
I'll never pay for him.
With their bond.
Yeah, with their new bond.
Which is an exciting bond. Story. Which is an exciting story. So, Juve raising money in new and innovative ways. We need to talk about, before we leave today's show, a club that urgently needs to find some funds, and that is Palermo. Before this Saturday, if possible, last December, Palermo became a big story, not least for the fact that they were leading Serie B at the time, when Maurizio Zamparini sold them to a British, in inverted commas, investment group, Sport Capital Investments. Fronted by
famous Sport Capital Investments.
Them, the same ones, yeah. Clive Richardson.
Which I think used to be a mining company until it was renamed that.
And they've now diversified and are going into the ferry business in terms of... Right? No, but anyway, led by Clive Richardson and aided at various stages by the likes of Dean Holdsworth and David Platt, Sport Capital Investments has somehow not managed to actually manifest itself in any real fashion with money, with... appointments. In fact, Il Sole 24 Ore, who are kind of like the Italian Financial Times, said that of the £15 million worth of capital that supposedly they were going to be putting in, only £100 has so far been deposited in the club. The net result is wages have not been paid for November and December, and the club may be messo in mora, as the expression goes. Do you want to explain what that means, Gab?
Basically, when you go into administration. And-
yeah.
The tribunal goes and sells off your assets. And because the club, other than the players themselves, don't really have any assets whatsoever, also because they've all been stripped by the great northern Satan who's been running them for the last 15 years, Maurizio Zamparini. And bear in mind, in normal circumstances, what would happen, Palermo fans would be going to Zamparini's house and they would be making Zamparini pay. Instead, because the mentality is that of the rich man who saves everything, there's still people pushing the narrative of like Zamparini's like, well, but to help the club, I may need to come back and, you know, no, go away. You created this problem.
Okay, so wages not been paid. The players can declare the club in breach of contract. This used to be a major thing in Serie A. We saw this at a bunch of clubs, the Messo in Mora, through the kind of dark days of the noughties. Basically, by Saturday, they need to find funds or somebody to come in and take over.
Yeah, and some of the people circling around the club, I wouldn't say inspire a lot of confidence. Anne Hathaway's ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who's just come out of prison, by the way.
Yeah.
Who went to prison for committing fraud together with the Archbishop in New Jersey.
Nice.
You know.
But on the subject of prison, by the way, on January 25th, Zamparini was placed under house arrest.
Oh, good. So they know where he is. Seriously. Go around his house.
For
honestly.
False accounting and money laundering.
I mean...
Nothing proved. But,
the whole thing... I mean, the takeover, it stinks. I mean, it's you look at some of the other people involved. I mean, there is an incredible statement. I think I sent it to Gab last week, put out by Sports Capital about their version of events and the kind of... how they went about the transfer window and all that sort of thing, where it's like, this is what happened on this day at this time, yeah, some of the people who seem to have been introduced these guys as well, I mean, you look at their reputations, it is not good in the slightest.
Mm. You're not on good terms with your cousin Clive, though, otherwise we could have him on the show.
He's very much the black sheep of the Richardson family.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you at least checked to see if you're related to him?
No, I haven't, actually. But my brother Gary has, and he said that... He said that he didn't think, unless, you know, to be fair, they, you know, Richardson's, they play pretty fast and loose.
And royal stock, relations. No, as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're Danny Dyer-esque in our family tree. Anyway, well, there you go. So that's very bad news for Palermo, who are only 1 point off the top of the table in Serie B. So the promotion campaign continues apace, but let's hope they can get the off-field problems resolved. Next week, we'll have a very special one without you, James, because you're going to have those plumbing issues.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Gab, you and I will get to tackle one of the most iconic figures of the last couple of decades in Italy.
He's on the Mount Rushmore of Serie A, no, in the 90s and 2000s.
I think he is. We'll find out who when we return on Galazzo next Wednesday. For now, many thanks to James, to Gab, to producer Charlie, and to you, listener. From all of us here, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.